Welcome to Catspina Music. In this episode, I talk with Patrick Ehrlich of Gramophone Media and author of The Compass Method, who through his own introspection and ability to truly listen, has helped countless artists uncover the why of what they do and provide a tangible way to navigate a career in music.
Right when I was about to leave the studio profession and make the transition fully to my own thing, I had been going that direction for a little while, but I hadn't really fully made the step out, you know, where you really let go of what you're doing and fully do the next thing. You kind of got one foot in, one foot out. And when you have one foot into the thing you're currently doing and one foot into the thing you really want to be doing, neither one gets your full attention and neither one gets what they need. So when I was making that full transition into doing my own thing, and being fully in control of my own destiny, that was at the same time that my wife had been laid off. So we had one kid and another one on the way, and she had been laid off. So her salary was gone. Health insurance for all four of us was gone, and she was making more than I was. So that's when I chose to leave my job fully.
Wow.
when there was nothing, there was no net.
Right.
And
all in it together.
It was all in, you know. I left my source of revenue knowing that the next week there would be zero. I didn't step into another situation where I could kind of transition and the money would be there. I had to create it out of nothing. So that particular moment, it was about a year and a half long period of being on the edge, was the hardest year, but probably the most fulfilling. I was locked into making it work and locked into fighting for something that I believed in. And I think that was, you know, as I kind of get into the zone with you a little bit on this podcast, that was kind of the transformative experience that was just like, wow. Sometimes you need to go to the edge and go all in, push all your chips into the middle of the table to have the opportunity to create something. I'm going to have to say it's been when I made the shift from being in the music business to wanting to make a contribution to it. I've done a lot of things. I used to run a commercial recording studio here called The Cutting Room. I did that for a long time. And then I kind of fell into starting a record label and then fell into music publicity, as you kind of do. You just fall into things. None of that was planned. So I've done a lot of different things. I've managed artists and bands. I've managed companies. I've built companies. But I think the through line that goes way, way back has always been that I've always been someone who has listened to artists and hear the emotional undercurrent. I've always been hypersensitive to that. But somewhere along the way, and I'm not exactly sure where, it'd be an interesting exercise for me to try to pinpoint, but somewhere along the way, I started really thinking about how to listen to that and then to use it and to create something that spoke to it. I guess it probably was not a specific moment. It was a gradual evolution of myself in the music business from someone who was just observing to someone who was consciously creating something for artists. So I think that's been the best experience, has just been kind of the awareness of my own growth and my own evolution within that. I try not to define myself by the things that I've done or the things I've built. Those are just things that I did.
Was there a moment that came up for you that really triggered you to dive into this method and explore it?
This came from me when I wanted to contribute. I never thought about blogging or writing. I still don't consider myself a writer. I consider myself a listener and an observer, and I just try to reflect it back. So the book really came about as I wanted to contribute to artists at a bigger scale than being able to do one-on-one meetings with people, which is what I was typically doing. That's very hard to scale. A book is a mechanism that can scale because it's a product, ultimately. So I wanted to scale what I was trying to communicate. One of the missions I'm on in life is to alleviate artist suffering. This book was kind of a prescription to improve the quality of the artist experience. This was a way that I could give back, because for me, there's nothing close. You know, artists and their music is like the soundtrack to my life, always going on in my head. And, you know, songs have saved me. Songs and lyrics have changed the course of my life, you know, over and over again. There's nothing more that I would want to do than to give back to the people who have done that for me. So first the book was like, how do I give back? And then it was like, what can I prescribe to artists to make their experience of having a life in music improve in quality? This was not going to be a book that was tactical, like how to make it in the music business. I've been in it for 20 years. I have no idea. Okay. So this was more of a why to book. I think that that's the space that isn't really being discussed with artists. This book was designed to condense your life in music into four kind of principles that I discuss in the book. And I break them out into four categories, basically. There's only four chapters into the book. The chapters are explore, navigate, wander, and summit. And these four principles are what I condense the musical experience into. And if you just focus on these core principles, your experience as in your life in music will improve in quality. You know, the compass analogy, I'm not even sure where that came to me from. I've always been kind of fascinated with direction and sense of direction and path, right? Yeah. So that felt very natural for me. I could have looked at, like, when you do the self-exploration work on yourself as an artist and you uncover what really drives you and why you do it, when you uncover that, that's almost like the magnetic north. Mm-hmm. I don't really attach to the true north analogy too much in the book. Mm-hmm. But when you do uncover that again, that becomes like that magnetic north. The book is almost like pulling out the compass. It's a tool that you can use to reorient yourself to that. So that's really the concept of the book. And of course, there's a nature theme to it. Explore, navigate, wander, summit. The artwork associated with it is very outdoorsy. That's a big part of my life as well. So I wanted to incorporate something that I really liked into the book. That was the first reason I did that, to make it fun for myself. And but also, it's practical as well. You know, a lot of the clarity that I've gotten about writing the book, from conceptualizing it to actually writing it, has been through being in nature. A lot of the clarity around what I'm doing, why I'm even writing the book, what the book's going to be talking about, has been conceptualized and fine-tuned, not even sitting down writing, mm-hmm. just actually being in the outdoors and being connected to nature. So that's, nature has actually been a critical tool, and there's a lot of neuroscience behind your brain activity and how you respond to nature. That theme is inherent in there, and it shows up a lot in my writing. I try to relate it to those types of themes. I think even talking about nature can lower your blood pressure.
Sure.
You know, so yeah. Kind of having that theme interweaved into the book was tonally by choice. It's that soft fascination they talk about when you're out in nature. So I wanted that to interweave that into the book as a tonal choice. So much artist advice out there is void of looking at an artist like a human being, doesn't know what they're doing either, and giving it everything that they can, and doing one of the most vulnerable things that a human can do, which is take their thoughts and mm-hmm. their deepest fears and their deepest pain and write about it, and then put it out there for everybody to ingest.
As a writer and a creative person, that silence, that nature, it really grounds us. It keeps us humble. And I can feel that with your writing.
That's what it is. It's about going out into nature and walking and experiencing nature and listening, you know, it's preventative medicine. As a creative, and for me, it's a focusing agent. The distractions are gone. Just kind of hone in to the process of thinking. And sometimes that is enough to really move things ahead. You know, I wrote about that a lot in my last blog piece about how I went away into nature for a writing retreat. Like, I'm going to write the whole book in one weekend. And, you know, it was naive. I ended up not writing it at all. But the process of just being in that environment and thinking allowed me to actually move the book ahead far. And I just had time to be clear about what I wanted it to be. So for me, the nature component gives me access to the clarity. I've always been a very introspective person. I was very quiet growing up. My mother used to worry about me about whether I would ever talk to people. I was very, very quiet. I processed internally so much. And I'm also a product of my environment. You know, I grew up with my father, who in his previous life before meeting my mother was a priest. So he was always someone who was listening to others, right? And counseling others. First, he was a spiritual guide. Then he was an academic guide. Just through like osmosis or whatever, I just absorbed that way of operating. And it's just in my DNA, I guess, to be a listener. And I've always considered myself an artist guide, kind of picking up that torch. And this is kind of the realm that I do it in. Self-awareness and introspection come natural to me. I actually don't know another way to operate. So when I do that work with artists, it's just the most natural state I can be in. Even though I've also been in business my whole life, my parents were also entrepreneurs, or whatever they were selling was always done through really listening and getting to know others. And it's indirect in that way, but it's honest in that way. And it feels good to do business that way too.
Right.
So as a business practice, it's effective because it's honest. So that's just how I do it. I don't know how to operate otherwise with an artist who, if you think about an artist at their core, they want to be heard, right? So it's the most natural response to deal with one is to hear them. At the end of the day, the work that I do for artists is really what drives me. And everything I've experienced and been through has contributed to how it's formed.
When I reconnected with you, I was really questioning where I fit in musically. And we got on the phone, and I remember this really vividly in my mind. We started talking about a morning routine. And I'm not quite sure exactly how we got there, but maybe it was the concept of focus. And I remember being in that moment thinking, there's no way I'm ever going to get up like 5 a.m. when I'm going to bed at 3 a.m. And what is it now about a healthy morning routine and that keeps you focused, that keeps the tone set for the day?
Okay, so as someone who lived most of my life without a morning routine, I remember how that went. And I think when you have no morning routine, you are at the mercy of what comes at you. You become more reactionary when you start your day rather than being in control of the tone. I resisted a morning routine for a long time. You know, I have family members who are also entrepreneurs who did the morning routine. And I was like, meh, it's not for me. I'm in music. We don't do that in this thing. Right. I think it's also a byproduct of many things, Kat. You know, when you get older, it's actually easier to get up earlier and harder to stay up later. So like your natural body rhythms help with that. Like I don't think I could have had a morning routine in my early 20s where I got up at 5. Just my biorhythms wouldn't have allowed for it. And I conditioned myself to be creative late at night. And a lot of people are like that. At this point in my life, it's easier for me to get up. And it's not easy. But like anything else, when you get into a repetition of it, everything becomes a little easier. I think for me too, you know, I have business and then I have two children. By the time I get to 10, 11 o'clock at night, nothing left creatively. In the morning before they wake up, which is between 6:30 and 7, that's my only window when I'm not getting text messages, emails, or being asked to do something. It's right. literally the only window of my day of total alone time without distraction. Mm-hmm. It's a byproduct of the way my life is set up. But I quickly realized in the last, I'll say, 4 or 5 years that I was never going to achieve the things I wanted to accomplish mm-hmm. or never complete projects if I didn't utilize my time better. Time is finite. I did a blog post about this a year and a half ago, maybe, about how we use our time. There's not a lot of time left. It can be alarming to look at that data. So I need to maximize that time between 5 and 7. It's a requirement for me now. And when I'm doing it right, which is not all the time, sometimes I mess that up terribly and oversleep a little bit. Mm-hmm. Some mornings I'm super productive. Some mornings I suck. but the process is I'll either get up, go right into meditation for anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes. Then I'll go write for an hour. And sometimes I have an agenda and I wake up and I don't want to do what I set out to do. And I'll just go off and do something. I'll do another writing exercise, or I'll just free write where I don't even know what I'm going to write about or what it's for. No, I'll have that morning set up to write on the book.
Sure.
And then I won't, because sure. I just feel like writing in a different direction. Sometimes I'll go right into the writing and then I'll meditate on the back end of it before my children wake up and have to deal with that. So for me, it's being in practice of it for a little while. When I'm out of it, when I'm out of that practice, my productivity level is maybe at 30% of my capacity. And when I'm in the zone, I might be 60 or 70%. And it's hard to reach maximum productivity. But if you're out to do things, if you're on a mission to make something mm-hmm. and complete your works, a morning routine is super valuable, because it just sets a discipline in motion, right? And when you put a discipline into your creative life, you start to put a routine together, and then the routine starts to form your habits, right? And then the habits are the foundation of where your thoughts come from. If you've got good routine and good habits, and then you have kind of good thoughts, your experience of the day tends to start from an empowered place, right? If you're out of routine, out of good habits, you're at the mercy of circumstance. So for me, it's a way to tackle the day and to feel like nobody's in control of anything, but it at least gives you the feeling that you might be in control of how the day goes,
sure.
Or at least to set the intention of it.
The core piece of who you are is a deep listener. How do you really listen?
Culturally, we were having a shared music experience. Television, radio. Culturally, if there was a song popular in those two formats, everyone knew it. Doesn't mean they listened to it, but you knew of it. We were all eating from the same trough. We just got to choose what we liked from it. In 2020, it's not a shared music experience. You know, I'm someone who's in the music business. Someone can have the number one song in the country and I don't know anything about it. And I've never heard it. Because if it doesn't match my listening tastes or my tendencies, it will never reach me. I'm getting fed by algorithms, and the algorithms are responding to what I'm listening to and sending me more of similar things. So now we're listening in our own private silos, right? My listening experience might be similar to friends of mine who have a similar listening palette, but it's customized for me. And you see that with things like Spotify, right? Where so much of their playlisting is algorithmic in their creation. My Discover Weekly is different than yours. You know, mm-hmm. it's based upon my listening palette, and it'll send me new things. So I think in one way that's good, because you're getting you're hearing things that you normally wouldn't. I hear artists all the time that I wouldn't know how to seek them out, but they'll find their way to me through algorithms, which I love that. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it can be limiting, because it sends you similar type things and you don't necessarily expand your palette. I listen more for tone than I do for a particular song necessarily. Sometimes I'll obsess over a song for a while, but I tend to listen to songs that match the mood I'm in. You know, one of my favorite things to listen to right now is a program called Pacific Notions, which is on KEXP radio out of Seattle. So Sunday mornings from maybe 9 a.m. to 12 Eastern, it's all ambient music, like really, really wonderful programming there.
Right.
And it puts me in that same kind of meditative zone. So like Sunday mornings, I love to be creative because that will be on in the background and it just puts me in like a laser focus where I can write. I don't have to listen to lyrics or anything like that. It just sets a tone and I can get lost in it a bit. So for me now, music is a little bit more of like, how do I want to use it? This is what's amazing about music. A song can come along or something and just like knock you off your feet and then you're like never the same. or an album can hit you and you just obsessively listen to it for like a year straight.
Right.
That happens to me a lot. I'll discover a song from an album and I'll be like, wow, this is amazing. I love this. And then I'll go look it up and it was released in 2013. And I'm just finding it now. And I don't care. For me, it's new. So I will listen to it, ignoring the fact that there's been five releases since. I just go to what I've just been kind of caught by. So that's how I listen these days. You're kind of your own DJ now, a little bit.
Right.
We forget.
Right.
We forget. We already take for granted all the things that are available to us right now. Like we can speak into the air and something will answer a question. A device will answer. I mean, right?
Yeah.
I can just speak into the air.
Yes.
And say, Alexa, play Gregory Alan Isakoff on Spotify.
Yeah.
And it just appears. We're kind of guiding our own soundtrack at all times, curating my life as it goes.
Yeah.
So, which I think is a pretty cool experience.
I want to say thank you for your contribution and for being a part of this podcast.
My pleasure, Kat. Thanks for having me.
I'm inspired by inspired people. If you want to learn more about the process, creativity, and the journey, check out my website, katspinamusic.com. Thank you again for listening.
So you hold on, hold on.